Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm very happy to have Dr. Max McEwen with us today. He is a strategic advisor on the on corporate innovation and also the author of multiple books on the subject, including Now, the Innovation Book, and the Strategy Book. Dr. McEwen, it's lovely to have you.
Great to be here, Nick. Thanks.
No problem. So for people who aren't aware of who you are or the work that you do, could you give us a very quick insight into the sort of work you do around creativity and innovation and how you got into it?
Well, my focus is very much how humans and human groups in particular shape the future. So how can you, from one point, this point now, look forward and change your behavior in ways that shape events to lead somewhere? And that has taken me on a path of lots of corporate consultancy, but also did research into psychology and education, an MBA, a doctorate, but all around this point.
And you've written a number of books on it. The ones you're probably most famous for are the Strategy Book and the Innovation Book, but you've also got Now, which has come out recently. What's the crux of Now?
Well, Now is about the psychology of moving forward. That's its focus. So what do we know about that? What do we know about different personality types, how they deal with fear, stress, regrets, challenge, all of those things? So it's about the psychology of always moving forward. And it's a little bit a response to mindfulness and some of the limitations of mindfulness and meditation, and also this some obsession to some extent of not being busy that people have at the moment as well, that they somehow imagine a world in which nothing needs to be done and they would be happier if there was nothing to be done, which I would dispute for a lot of people.
I think everyone who's at the summit would dispute that as well. They want to get better at actually generating ideas and making them happen, and that's why it's the Creativity and Innovation Summit, and I'm glad that you have a perspective on both of those subjects. But what is your view on what exactly is creativity and what is innovation?
Well, we said that innovation, my definition would be that this is about making new ideas useful. It's a form of practical creativity. And those two parts are very important, the new, the useful, and I suppose the third part, the making it useful. And that's my definition of innovation. Creativity, in a sense, it's somewhat more difficult because creativity just means to create something. But to create what becomes the question next. Now, what most people think of when they consider creativity is coming up with something new or artistic in some way, but really it just means creating. Innovation is my focus because it's about making those new ideas useful.
I think what I found from interviewing some of the other people during the summit, especially the academic researchers on creativity, is within the academic field, the general definition of creativity they're coming towards is something that's new or original, but also has value or usefulness. And it's those two parts together. You can't just have something that's completely new but completely useless. Do you agree
with that? Well, I mean, clearly you can. But innovation, for me, it's useful if we keep it to the useful use of new ideas. It's too many uses in one sentence. But it's helpful. Because if we just make it all of creativity, what is it we want innovation for? For what? And it doesn't even matter if it's new, except that it might take us somewhere that was previously impossible. There's somewhere better that previously was impossible. That's what I love about innovation. Not its novelty per se, but there are a lot of people who just love the novelty, including a lot of people who've taken part in this.
Yeah, I know. There's so many bad brainstorming sessions where it seems like the aim of the facilitator is to get as big a wall covered with post-it notes for as many different ideas as possible, and then lose track on what's actually important for the company.
Yes, for the company, for the country, for the organization, it seems sometimes people have two modes in meetings. There's the mode of going through the agenda, the dull meeting, where people are just dying and so glad they have a smartphone with which to escape, and the brainstorm, where the idea is to forget that there really even is a purpose. I think it's much more sad. You can imagine how frustrated the two groups are. You have the groups of creatives who really hate that dull meeting, and the group of people who want to get things done, the doers, who hate the brainstorm because they go, but what's the point? There are bad ideas, as the facilitator says, that there's no such thing.
You mentioned earlier that your book now starts talking about different personality types as far as helping innovation to happen. Is this the definition you're talking about, the difference between doers and creative people, or is it something different?
It's something a little different. As you'll know, personality isn't fixed, and we have multiple personality traits anyway. So not only is our behavior not our personality, we're many, many things, not just introverts and extroverts or nowists and thenists. But getting back to the question, the nowist really refers to people who are dominantly primed for action. Given a choice, they would be looking for fastest way of starting anything. Their need is to keep moving and keep moving, and they will choose whatever is available to do that. Sometimes this is fantastic, occasionally not so good, because they will choose action even if that action is just sort of crazy. And then the thenist, and their dominant mode is to consider alternatives. And those alternatives can get in the way of action. They seek perfection, or merely to discuss all the different possibilities, purely as an intellectual exercise. But this stems from, as you'll probably know, but some of the listeners might not, really, brains are not about hemispheres as much as they are about neural networks. And we have a lot of those, but two particularly important networks I refer to in this book as the now network, where your brain is looking to make decisions, to act, to seek the next movement. And then the thenist, or the then network, which is considering alternatives. And in the literature, I would link this to the default mode network, that is the part of our brain that is always on, that even when you're at night is thinking about what happened yesterday and what's going to happen the day after. And these two networks are always there, but you can be dominant in one or dominant in the other, or find a way of mixing the two. Long explanation.
No problem. That's what people came here to see. They want the detail behind understanding things better. Is that the level of detail that these personality traits go into? Because I understand in your book you also talk about the next level of detail of how to divide people into what's called ha-ha and la-la groups. It sounds a bit funny, and they both make sort of laughing sounds, but is it a laughing matter, or what's the serious point behind it?
Well, the phrases came from a book I wrote called Adaptability. And the ha-has are the high adaptability, high achievement groups. And the la-las are the low adaptability, low achievement groups. And the difference really there is a form of resilience, roll and get back up again, that the ha-has have. They kind of laugh in the face of danger. That's one of the ways the term came up. But the la-las really are seeking to, they're fixed, and they don't want to go anywhere either. And you can imagine that as a 2x2 grid, and how you can have people who are high adaptability but low achievement. And those people can really adapt to any situation, except they don't want to go anywhere new. They have the ability but no ambition. Worst of all, possibly, it would be to be high ambition, low adaptability, because you want everything, but you can't change. And there, I don't know, la-las are probably worse off. But there you might have somebody who does particularly well if they are suited to their environment as it happens. But if the environment changes, they won't be able to change with it.
It sounds like that's related to a point you alluded to earlier around the mindfulness trend that happened a couple of years ago, and people feeling like they don't, well, some people feeling like they don't necessarily need to be busy or get anything done. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it appears that there's some lie-in here, I think. It's a rhetorical trick, but I'd say it's perhaps an unhelpful one in our actual lives. It says something like, people boast about being busy. Aren't they stupid? They boast about being busy to make themselves self-important, but we're so clever we realize they're wrong. Something like that. But first of all, busy's fun for some people. I would suggest for a lot of people, to be busy, to be actively engaged, to have things to do, is certainly what I want. It's far better than boredom or penury, to have no money, no jobs, nothing to occupy the mind or fill the bank account. And I think that my problem with the mindfulness, meditation, the colouring books, the fad, is that we are only giving people tools to cope. We're saying that's all you get. Unburden yourself, step back. If your boss calls while you're dealing with your children, then that's impossible and a really bad situation. But the research suggests that there are one, super jugglers, people who are fantastic at dealing with multiple things. There's an experiment, I believe it's in Arizona, it's described in Now, and they found that there are these people who, if you put them in a driving test, you know, in a simulator, and you're driving along, they would give them a mobile phone and ask them to perform different activities on it, or give them, and they found that a set of people could do that perfectly well, talk on their mobile phone while they drive, and then they started asking them mathematical problems as well, and they could do that while they drove. No problem. So these super jugglers clearly can do it, and I'm not saying we should drive while we use mobile phone, but I am saying that we're capable of a lot of task juggling. We don't have to do one thing at a time. And indeed, I do not believe that the people who write these books about doing only one thing at a time do one thing at a time.
It's interesting you mention that, because there seems to be so many contradictory studies coming out around this subject of how many things can a human do simultaneously. I remember last year there was some study which claimed that statistically only 2.5% of people can multitask in real time. And then there's these other studies around this concept of ego depletion, where you only have a certain amount of focus in a day, and after that's used up, you don't really have the ability to resist temptation anymore. Do you have an insight into what's actually true, what there is more evidence about, or which ones of these might not actually be true?
I suppose on the first one, Nick, the one about task jugglers and the multitasking, I also like that. Isn't there a statement about how multitasking is a term only just invented? Previously, nobody did anything, two things at once. Which I've just been reading the Cicero history, so back to Rome pre-Christ, and Roman life was pretty complex. I don't think we've invented any level of complexity that gets above that. So first of all, we've been doing it a long time. Secondly, yes, there are some people who are better than others, the super jugglers I mentioned, but that most of us can do it really rather well, and we can do it a lot better with practice. Third, definitions of multitasking vary hugely and complicate this discussion. What do we mean? Do we mean the example I said, when you drive while juggling, while smoking a joint? Do they mean that kind of multitasking? Or do they mean thinking about three thoughts at once or listening to music? And again, it depends. It depends on where, most of all, on a day-to-day practical basis, on whether you're confident and feel that multitasking is good. If you fight the multitasking, you're worse at it. If you embrace it, you're better at it. I suppose the next point that you raised was about ego depletion. Again, that's become a very complicated and messed up, bastardized discussion, because ego depletion originally started with the idea of willpower, to do something specific, that you would lose willpower, and that the ego depletion was just an energy source, just like food. The famous radish experiment, where if you fed people radishes, they lost the ability to sort of concentrate. And now it's become linked to the idea of focus in general, like it's a finite resource. Well, all is finite, but that doesn't mean we should limit ourselves to one thought at a time. Indeed, for creativity, it would be rather foolish.
And let's let's take it to that level then. Let's focus back on the concepts of creativity and innovation now. And through all of the work that you've done and the books you've written and the work you're focusing on now, let's find out some insights as to what helps creativity and what helps innovation and what sort of things might actually hurt them as well.
Okay, so things that hurt innovation and creativity specifically, of course, is to have a limited set of new information or a limited set of connections. That would be the biggest. If you have somebody in isolation from new ideas, or somebody who becomes very fixed in their thoughts and cannot or will not make connections, you have nothing new. Nothing new will come. So it's kind of creativity vacuum. If you judge the idea too soon, if we decide that because an idea is imperfect or we don't understand it yet or it's inconvenient or unpopular, that we shouldn't pick it up and look at it and examine it. So then if we look next at what could be done to improve matters, exactly the reverse. If you have lots of information coming in, lots of new ideas and stimulus, and you play at connecting them, like Lego, like Stickle Bricks for British listeners, or Meccano for a sort of global audience, or Minecraft, if you start connecting them, then as you see those overlaps, you start to build things with them. And I think there's a big difference here between the builder doers and people who've never played with ideas. They only hear about them. It's the playing with them and the making things that really sort of develops our creativity and our creative ability.
And what about this concept of different personality types working together? Because you mentioned at the beginning that you can be in a meeting and the doers or the nowists are very focused on getting what's on the agenda done as efficiently as possible, and the other group, the theners, essentially dreaming a bit more about what's possible. I know from my experience and my client work that this often leads to a lot of frustration within teams and companies. Do you have any insights on how that can be improved?
I think the first thing, that, like a lot of this, is to have it described to a group so that they can see that the analysis, that this is what is happening and this is why. And then you are armed. You're able to say, oh, okay, that's why we keep disagreeing. Because you've stopped listening because you're impatient to get out of the room, and I'm still talking, but I don't actually do anything. And I think once you even identify it, the groups start to alter their behavior somewhat. And of course, there are people who overlap tremendously between these two points. That's why you have the Zuckerbergs and the Elon Musks of this world who are thinker-doers, and they do both. And are therefore super nowists. They consider the different possibilities, and then they do what they thought about. And that's the problem for anybody who can't do a thing, is that they have to talk about the thing, which is a little bit frustrating. So how could you improve it? Let them know that this is a problem, but then teach them how to actually make things together. First, silly things. Just to get used to it. But then, give you an example, brainstorm. don't really want a brainstorm with 1,000 ideas on sticky pads that nobody uses that go into a manager's box afterwards, and they sort them through, send out an email with a big list of things to do, and say, we'll do the 3 we were already doing. This is frustrating to everybody. Total waste of time. Instead, what you want to do is say, hey, look, we'd like to solve this or improve that. Now let's talk about it. And everybody can write their one idea down, but I have a technique called the battle of ideas. And what you do is you take that one idea that you have and you talk about it to your neighbor and you have a battle. And only one idea goes forward to the group. And you keep doing this until you only have maybe 5 ideas to discuss. And then as you discuss those as a group, and if you have a skilled person helping them, you take the idea and you say, but what was that for? What was its purpose? How can we make it real? And you use the group not to just decide whether it's good or bad, but to nurture the idea. Ideas are like children, need nurturing. They're beautiful to the person who creates them, ugly to everybody else, and they're definitely not finished yet.
And let's take it up the corporate ladder a bit. You do a lot of work at strategic levels with companies, and I assume this is more focused around the innovation aspects than the creativity aspects. Can you describe the sort of challenges that the companies face and how you actually go about helping them so people can get some tips on how to do it?
Tips on how to work with the top team, or tips on how to...
If they have these sorts of challenges, how to approach the challenge?
Yeah, let me think of the ones. The challenges large organizations have, they say, oh, we would be creative, but we don't have enough time. They say they would be creative, but they don't have any resource. They would be creative if there weren't so many rules. And that's largely it, those 3 things. So they say, if you free us and ask nothing else of us, then we would be mightily creative. Again, I'm not really, and this leads to the popularity of the so-called 20% rule at Google that I'm sure everybody listening has heard of. The idea at Google once upon a time that they would give their engineers 1 day a week to work on their own projects. Now these people have time to do things. I would say that you have to address all of those issues, but they're not the most pressing. The most pressing thing is to give people an experience of being truly creative, as in productively turning new ideas into something useful. And when they've had that experience, they start to copy it. We're copying animals. They start to copy it, and then the next meeting is a little bit more creative and purposeful. And they start to copy it because they've seen it and felt it, and it felt good. And they copy it because it works. And this, I think, is really rather different to the typical corporate creativity training, which involves techniques. Tell people about different hats, tell people about brainstorming, tell people about asking some sort of puzzle or question.
Yeah, how would Apple do this? There's you can get books of 101 different creativity techniques for brainstorming sessions. And it relates back to what you said earlier. You often take these techniques and you just end up with a longer list of ideas that aren't necessarily more groundbreaking.
No, and it doesn't. If you look at the breakthrough idea, people who are known for being very creative, organizations known for being very creative, or the origins of breakthrough ideas, you find that it didn't involve those techniques. And even if they happen somewhere, that's not what explains 99% of the breakthrough. So I think that's a great problem. So you have creativity training, then you have a creativity icebreaker, then you have something else, and it's not really learning. It's one of the reasons that I encourage people to form innovation clubs. And so my clients or my readers, even those who don't have the budget for me, that was very self-important, the budget for me, they take the book They take 6 copies of the innovation book. They give it to 6 people. And those 6 people spend 1 hour over a 6-week period just discussing part 1, part 2, part 3, up to 6 of the book and applying it to their job and to their company. And then they split and form 2 new groups and then some more groups and some more groups. And so the idea is sort of an exponential thing, that you start with deep knowledge and you work your way up, rather than starting with shallow knowledge for everyone and then feeling like it was a big failure and hiring a creative agency to do your work for you. So I think you can go deep and you can focus on the real creativity rather than the techniques.
I like that, because as you say, there's only so much value that you can learn in a 2-hour session, especially when you bring in a facilitator and it's essentially their job to be the expert of the techniques and everyone else just follow them. If you actually teach people to think about their own creativity and the way they approach problems in a new way, they're going to own that a bit more.
Yeah, it's a challenge I have with all method is methodology, but it's a problem I have with over-heavy, over-rigid methodologies anyway. They take away the power, they take away the fun, and they take away the product, which is worst of all. So yeah, it's the same problem I have with agile software methodologies and Six Sigma, because they become somehow valued for themselves rather than what they might do. And yet we've had Six Sigma, the companies most famous for using them, companies like Motorola, fail. IBM failed at that point. High quality, but stuff nobody wanted. What's the point?
I would warn
anybody listening to this about rigid or overly heavy methodologies. How about learn from the people who do it and then practice it, just like any other skill? Oh, how does Zuckerberg did it? How did that idea come? What did he sketch it on? Uber, I know they're having a bad press for leadership at the moment, but where did it come from? How did the prototype work? What did they sketch it? And then you find that it was just a drunken chat and a bet. And then somebody wrote something on a piece of paper, and that was how it came about, not by somebody going through this, again, rigid methodology.
Yeah. I always find it interesting that I can't name a single super successful innovation that can be definitely traced back to a single brainstorming session.
The only one I can give you is Twitter, off the top of my head. Twitter, they were struggling to compete with iTunes. They were another company altogether, struggling to compete with iTunes. And so they sent everybody out to have a kind of very loosely termed brainstorm outside. So one group went to a children's playground. Again, this is not strict methodology, is it?
Yeah.
Really just have a chat. So they're out there on the swings, the roundabouts and everything. And somebody said, wouldn't it be really good if I could share my SMSs with everybody in the company when I want to say something funny?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a good idea if I could share it publicly? And they then went and built it, Doers. And then the idea, of course, became so successful that they bought the company and then created a rather interesting US president.
But less said about that.
Going to show that brainstorms are bad.
Yeah. We're coming up to the end of the interview, unfortunately, but what I like to ask all of the experts is, if you've got one tip, one actionable piece of advice that people can go out and actually try, I think we've covered a whole host of them already, but if someone wants to try something this afternoon or this week, what can they do to improve their creativity and their ability to innovate?
Well, the one that comes to mind right now is that new experiences lead to new behaviors. And as a test of that, go and do something you do anyway in a new environment. So, for instance, I wrote part of Now. I wrote it all on my mobile phone. First book I've done like that. So I've written it in the bath, I've written it in planes and train stations, I've written it while I've been walking, and I've written it in nightclubs. And it certainly led to lots of ideas as I went along. And so, you know, go and have your team meeting in the pub if you've never done it before. Go and have your, whatever you normally do, go do somewhere else. A theme park, a roller derby, a laundrette. Because you will get much more from your experience if you do something new. It will automatically make you creative, even if you don't want to be.
Perfect. Dr. McEwen, it's been wonderful having you here. If people want to find out more about your work, then we're going to have all of the links down in the description. Is there anywhere specific that you recommend they go?
Well, all my books, including my new book now, I've learned this from the chat shows, American actors, they have no problem picking up their stuff. This is a very good book.
Oh, it is.
So you can go to Amazon, Waterstones, any bookshop will have copies of all my books. You can go to maxmcewen.com and see some of my blogs, or just hit me up on LinkedIn or Twitter.
Perfect. It's been wonderful having you here, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Nick.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.